DCK, UDCK, UD90.3 FM.
KUT 90.3 FM. It's a little bit past 6 p.m. and this is In the Motherhood for March 16th, 2022. I'm your host tonight, Robin Fadden. And before we begin the show, I'd like to mention that CKUT's funding drive starts tomorrow and you can donate anytime until March 27th. And you can donate directly to this show or to any show to keep the station going strong. On today's In the Motherhood, I'm sharing a new podcast produced by Montreal nonprofit organization, the Refugee Center, and the podcast is called Point of Entry. It signifies the various points of entry made by refugees and asylum seekers around the world. Thank you very much to the Refugee Center for giving us permission to broadcast this podcast. Point of Entry explores the experiences and the challenges faced by many newcomers at various stages in their journey. This podcast transcends borders to focus on the voices behind the numbers and the policies typically associated with refugee issues. I'll be broadcasting two recent episodes of Point of Entry that focus on newcomer families. You can listen to all the episodes on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and find those episodes at pointofentrypodcast.org. To learn more about the Refugee Center and the work they do, you can visit their website at therefugeecenter.org. You can also find them on social media. On the episodes I'll be playing today, the first is an interview with Sharon Nelson, the vice president of the Jamaican Association of Montreal. I'll play that podcast episode now.
There always has to be a voice for people who may be very shy, don't know how to express themselves, or young, or not yet at a place in their lives where they can necessarily say, I am me, and that is okay.
Hello, and welcome to Point of Entry, a podcast created and hosted by the Refugee Center. Join us as we explore the experiences and challenges faced by many newcomers to Canada at various stages in their journeys. Transcending borders, Point of Entry offers an exclusive into the voices behind the numbers and the policies behind the action. Travel alongside the Refugee Center as our alternate, as well as our captivating guests, guide us through the resettlement process in Canada and introduce us to the inner workings of grassroots organizations here in Montreal. My name is Alina Murad, and I'm part of the communications team at the Refugee Center, and I'm very excited to be a part of today's episode. Today, I will be speaking with Sharon Nelson, first vice president at the Jamaica Association of Montreal. We will be discussing challenges faced by newcomer women and the association's exciting Au Futur program. Sharon, thank you so much for being here today. To start things off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a board member?
Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it. I'm quite excited to be here as well. How did I become a board member? So let me start with that. I've been a part of the Jamaica Association for the past 6 or 7 years now. And I was invited to consider being on the board. And so, you know, you put your name in the hat and then it stuck with me, or I stuck with it. So for the last so many years, I've been a board member, and then I went on to be the secretary of the board. And as of 2019, I've been acting in the role of the first vice president. So it's quite exciting. It's a part of my volunteer life. But in my professional life, I work at Concordia University, and I am the assistant director for the executive MBA program, which is also a fascinating program for people who are looking to continue their MBA while they work. So that's a little bit about me.
Wow, that's so exciting. You have so many different things that you're doing.
Yes.
So what is it like being a community organization operating in Quebec?
Well, it's quite fascinating. You know, we've been in existence for now almost 60 years. In November of this year, we will be 60 years old in Montreal. So we started in November. I don't remember the exact day, but November 1962, just a few months after Jamaica's independence. So the independence is on August 6th, 1962. That's when that occurred. So the folks that were here in Montreal, there are a number of Jamaicans, and it was a little bit isolating. They were newcomers. They were some of them too refugees, some of them looking for other opportunities. And when they moved to Montreal, they decided that they wanted to, you know, they wanted to see people that looked like them, that sounded like them, that ate the same food. So they transcended, you know, some of the things that you talked about in the introduction, they transcended and came together and formed this community organization that we are now, that we now have, to be able to help other newcomers, not only coming from Jamaica, but from other parts of the world. We have in our Okutu program, we have a number of women that are from the African continent, but we also have other women coming from definitely Jamaica, but also other parts of the Caribbean. And so this program and the Okutu program is an opportunity for these, for us to help those transition into a new space, to break some kind of isolation that they may be feeling, to orient them into another way of being in this new space. As just like those persons who came in the, you know, the 40s, 50s and 60s, and also found that collective. So the Jamaica Association is still acting as that collective to help people through. So what is it like being an English speaking community organization in this province? We recognize that, but what we also recognize is that the government of Quebec has been very supportive of our community organization, and they're one of our major funders. So definitely we adhere to the guidelines of our funding, but we're also very vocal in many ways about how we think things can be improved. What we also are is recognizing that we need a basis, if you will. We need a collective, and we form that in order to allow for other Caribbean islands and groups to recognize, to be able to help each other, and all to share information amongst each other, and so to be able to have a strong voice within the Montreal community, within the Quebec province. So, you know, kind of a long-winded way to answer that question, but it's kind of a mesh of many different things. And how does one feel? So we're very positive. We're very we remain very positive, although we do recognize the hurdles that are in place. But always, as humans, we are very adaptable. And but because we are still here, we're still living here. We have a community here. We have a life here, and therefore we have to make a path forward for those who are need that help, and for us who are still here. So that's what it feels like to be a community organization in Quebec: resilient, steadfast and true, and also recognizing that we do have a place. The politics of the time is the politics of the time, but we still are recognizing that we do have a space here in Montreal, and that's how we feel to be a community organization that has 60 years of existence within the city.
I love that. That is so incredible. Especially, I love the use of the word resilient, because that I feel like that really summarizes everything that you were saying. Mm-hmm. And you kind of touched on it a little bit in your answer, but I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about how the Jamaica Association came to be established over time.
Right. So we started off as a social club. That's how we began. People getting together, getting to see each other, hear each other, be in each other's company, hear music, and share stories. That's how we came together as a social club. And over time, it was recognized that while it is nice to have a social club, and it is important, and it's still a vital part of our organization today, that in everything there has to be growth in order to be sustained and sustainable, right? So we cannot just be the one thing, because if the people that are not there at the time that created that social club are not there anymore, who will take over and what will be important? So growth and change also represents the recognizing what's happening in today's reality, what is happening and what the needs are right? The needs of the first of the newcomer generation is not the same as the first or second or third generation. So understanding that's how we came about, really a social club, but then evolved into being the many different things that we are today.
That is really incredible. Wow. So I guess in a sort of a similar vein, what do you see on the horizon for the association, given the fact that it's been changing so much?
Well, I see that continuing, because I see as people are always progressive in building, I see that, you know, we are a group of people who care a lot about where our community, but we also care about people within our community, and it's not limited to the Jamaican society or community. It is the wider community here within Montreal and anyone who needs help. And I think a part of who we are and what our motto is as a country, and so that lives within us, is out of many, one people. So although people may not be Jamaican by heritage or Black or whatever, it doesn't matter, because everyone is represented in our country, right? Where we come from. And it's the motto is out of many, one people. And therefore it means that helping everyone. So if within my family, I have back home, I have people who look like you. I have, you know, who are Indian descent. I have people who are Chinese. I have people who are Black. I have people who are white. So it is an innate sense of, yes, most people, when they think about Jamaica, they think about Black people, but there's an array of different people that come from Jamaica and call Jamaica their home. If you could talk about one of the oldest synagogues in North America exists in Jamaica. So it is, those are the different parts of Jamaica. So when you think about, I go back to in history to go forward and to say that's where we see ourselves as an evolving group, as a group of people who care a lot about our community and different communities and all parts of community. So as a result of that, as that is the basis, it's building for the future and continually building for the future.
Fantastic. Wow. Honestly, speechless. So you sort of mentioned this a little bit when you were speaking earlier about the O Future program, but what do you feel are the main challenges that newcomer women and families face upon arrival, in your experience?
Well, see, acclimatization. So it's another, you know, when women are coming here with their children, they're coming here not because sometimes of want, but because of need. They need to leave a specific space for a particular reason. And if they need to flee or move fast, it means that they're not necessarily coming with a lot with them. They're not coming with a lot of resources, if you will, financial or potentially otherwise, or even connection. They may be alone. They may have heard of this space and they said, okay, I need to get out of here. I need to try. So that is where a lot of the challenges exist, where for these women, in that they're coming out of need, right? And so it's finding, understanding their story, developing that trust, and then finding the resources to orient them here, and that they feel that they're going to be okay, you know, because there's also this issue of fear, isolation, access to capital, financial capital, and being able to live in the weather that we have today, like the blowing snow and the cold, if they're coming from a space that's not, they've never seen snow or never experienced what it is to be at -5, let's say, that's freezing for some people, right? So finding adequate housing, finding adequate, you know, some are coming pregnant, you know, they haven't given birth yet and they need connection to what do I do? I'm going to give birth and, you know, what are the opportunities open to me? What options do I have? Because they're leaving a space in out of necessity, let's say.
Mm-hmm. What's up, everybody? It's Natasha from the Refugee Center, and I'm here to tell you what's up. February is a very exciting month for our wellness sector. On February 15th, we have an online exercise class with Alexandra. Come raise your heartbeat with us. We also have our ongoing individual art therapy sessions in partnership with the Montreal Therapy Center, and our online art therapy group for newcomer mothers in partnership with the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts. Also in partnership with the Museum of Fine Arts is our Art and Self-Care Workshops, happening once a month from February 17th to April 7th at 5:30 p.m. Lastly, we have a collage art workshop happening on February 10th at 5 p.m. Come collage in the company of others. You can sign up for all of these events on our website. We hope to see you there. And now, back to the episode.
Completely. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So to get into sort of the juicy parts of this, can you tell us what the O Future program is?
Okay. It is a program that began more than 30 years ago in collaboration with La Maison d'Haïti. And where that began, the genesis was at St. Justin's Hospital, in that a lot of pediatricians and the doctors there recognized that there were a lot of young women that were coming to give birth of all backgrounds. It was not limited to Black women, but of all backgrounds and all religious denominations. So what they do recognize at the time was that, so I would say that it started in 93, but the genesis began a little bit before that. So in the 80s, leading into the 90s, late 80s into the 90s. And so what they recognized was that Black women, young Black women, were not aborting their children. They were keeping them. And that was a big differentiator than, not that other women weren't keeping their babies, but the significant difference was there, to show that a lot of Black women were keeping their children. So what they also recognized was, for whatever reason, whether it's religious or guilt or whatever, or family, this was the reality. But what they recognized also was that women were then being either left alone, they were thrown out of their homes, so they didn't have a space. They were young, so they were probably in their, you know, late teens, early 20s. And they were isolated. They didn't have the skill sets because many of them were not able to complete their studies because of the choice that they had made. And that choice was their choice, and it was, you know, right for them. But the realities and the logistics of life may not have resonated in that way. So the St. Justice Hospital reached out and got a number of organizations together, such as the CLSCs within Côte d'Ivoire, and that was the St. Justin's Hospital is located in the Côte d'Ivoire area, and therefore we were there as well as Maison d'Haïti, because the reality was we wanted to kind of, they wanted to, because I wasn't there at the time, but they wanted to bridge the English and French divide. And so over years, they looked at different programs, and one program they noticed was a program in Florida, which was a similar program. And they took the framework of that program and they transplanted it here to Montreal. So the collaboration between the CLSCs and the community organizations was wonderful, because here you had, the thinking is that those who are coming from these different areas, you know, or Black women, would resonate with these different organizations, the Jamaica Association and La Maison d'Haïti, right? But then incorporating healthcare as part of that was the CLSC, right? So over these years, we partnered and collaborated with these different groups, and over time, different groups have left, such as this, or don't have the same involvement in the program. But Maison d'Haïti and the Jamaica Association have kept the that collaboration going since 1993. And our program is funded by the government. It's funded by the Health Canada, right? So we're able to put in place staff to specifically look at the needs of these different women and their children, and what, you know, to be able to be a voice for them, to be able to share their stories, whether it's about immigration as well and claiming immigration status or refugee status, or other, and finding them the assistance to do that. So that's where the genesis of the program comes from. So it's a long story. Yes, we have the story today, but it's been more than 30 years in the making of working together with other organizations to create that space. And so over that time, many other organizations have learned about the O-Future program. And therefore, when women go to them for help, they will also refer them to the Jamaica Association for this program, but also for the other programs that we have that can also assist them.
That is great. I love how that story has evolved. And I also love that there's so many different community associations that are involved with it as well. I think Absolutely. That it really shows the heart of the program.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
So, I mean, I can definitely see how it addresses the challenges that you previously spoke about. But why do you find it necessary to have a program specifically for young mothers?
Specifically for young mothers, and even more so young Black mothers, to, one, break the stigma that's, I think, sometimes exists that, Black women have a lot of children. It's not necessarily the case. A lot of women have a lot of children, but also to be a voice for women who need that voice. You know, we cannot necessarily assume that because we're in 2022 now that, you know, people should know a particular thing or be a particular thing. There always has to be a voice of for people who may be very shy, don't know how to express themselves, or young, or not yet at a place in their lives where they can necessarily say, I am me, and that is okay, right? Or may not be able, for one reason or the other, to make certain decisions, right? And need guidance, need help, need a voice to hear them. I think that's where we stand today with all the things that we do, but also very important to continue to have that voice so that people feel, also see reflection. Because within community, within society, and more specifically, this program is for young Black women. So more specifically, in terms of the Black women, the Black woman is stereotyped in a negative way in social media, in society. So, and yes, we do see definite positive images, but more so the ongoing image or reality is that the Black woman is not, whatever you want to put not next to not. And therefore having the opportunity to tell women who may not be able or understanding that they can have their own voice is really, really important, because not only don't they have their own voice, they have children, and children reflect their parents. Whatever their parents generally do, those kids reflect. So then kids internalize. So if we're looking to build a better future for children, we have to be a voice and a representation for their parent.
Definitely. Intergenerational healing. It's so important.
Very much so. Very much
so. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that so much. So you told us that beautiful story about how the O Future program came to be, but were there any challenges in implementing it?
There always are, and there always continue to be some things. But maybe we shouldn't look at it as challenges. Maybe opportunities sometimes, as I said, when the program first began, I'm sure there were challenges. I wasn't there. I wasn't a part of that process. But I think what is telling is the fact that we kept the program alive over years. We kept it going over years. And, I think it's really now the opportunity to continue to build the program and to build with our partners and our collaborators. Specifically, our main collaborator in this is Maison d'Haïti. And interestingly enough, this week we have a meeting with them to, as the year has begun, to kind of look at where we are and continue on our journey together.
That's so exciting. Looking forward to seeing what comes from that.
Absolutely.
So you are also the chair of the association's Women's Auxiliary. Are there any intersections or commonalities between the work that you do with the Auxiliary and the O Future program?
Right. Over years, in some cultures sometimes, and in some places, we had university clubs that were only open to teachers, male teachers, right? And female faculty were like, why can't I come, right? And to some extent, that's what the Jamaica Association at one time was. It felt, or rather felt like, that women's place was kind of in the kitchen, and they were going to help out and they're going to decorate and all that kind of stuff. And the image of the woman, while respected, was not kind of where it should be or where it could be. And I would say that I am sharing the revived version of the Women's Auxiliary because many years ago we had, in 1987, we had Ibeline Fleming, who was a former president of the Jamaica Association, the only female president of the organization. And she too, at that time, she, I should say, started the Women's Auxiliary. And to have the voice of women represented and respected within the organization. And taken seriously, I would say even more so, you know. But over time, and this is where it's quite interesting, where at one point she was president from 87 to 88, and it was hard for some people, actually, I think, to have a woman as the leader of the Jamaica Association. So she was there for about a year. And during that time, she created the Women's Auxiliary. And that was an opportunity for women to do things together, to spend time together, to have their voices implanted within the organization. And interestingly enough, after her presidency, she left the organization and created the Jamaica Canadian Women's League, which was an offshoot of the Auxiliary, but outside of the Jamaica Association. And that existed for many, many, many years. And they did a lot of different things within the community. They did a lot of, gave back to community through scholarships to kids and children. In 2016, we revived the auxiliary to be able to have the voices of women in the Jamaica Association.
Hey guys, it's Phil, and I'm here with this week's In the Know segment. This episode, we are discussing Somalia's extreme weather conditions, forcing displacement across the country. According to the UNHCR, an intensifying drought in Somalia could displace as many as 1.4 million people over the next 6 months. Nearly 245,000 people have already abandoned their home in search of food, water, and pasture, mainly in the central and southern regions of the country. Extreme weather events like floods and drought have combined with a decades-long internal conflict, leaving an estimated 2.9 million Somalis internally displaced. Drought conditions tend to create tensions over grazing areas and water sources that increase conflict and the number of people forced to move. Now that you're in the know, let's return to the episode.
Right. And all really to be female focused, not male exclusionary, but female focused, which is not dissimilar, right? Men are invited to join our events and to be a part of our events, but really the conversation for the auxiliary is around women, what we want to do, how we want to do things, whether it's go to a museum outside of COVID or go on a trip or just have what we do regularly, every like 3 times a year or something, that we have a tea and talk, which is we'll sit down and we'll just chat about something and we'll be thinking maybe 2 hours and 3 hours later, but we'll have presentations on money, on property, on rights of women in marriage, right? And so talking about issues that are interesting and important, but also doing fun stuff like going for a walk on the mountain and just in, you know, being in each other's company. So that's what the Women's Auxiliary has evolved to be, really a group that really is female focused, does not exclude men, but really puts the focus on the identity of the woman within the Jamaica Association. And that embedding it in a way that it is normalized, that it is a part of the reality and not an offside to the Jamaica Association, right? And yeah, and really the bottom line of everything that we do is to have fun. And so whether it's, you know, we have a tradition where we get together, it's an opportunity to get together, but we decorate the Christmas tree. And we put that up as, hey, you know, we came together, we did the Christmas tree, or we sat down, we had a potluck, or we had a presentation, or we went on a trip somewhere. One of the only trip that we did together was a trip to the museum in Ottawa, and a day in Ottawa, which was quite fun, you know?
Yeah, that sounds so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so sort of similar. Are there any upcoming events from the Jamaica Association that we can look forward to?
Well, actually, yes. So actually, let me go back to that, because you asked about the cross section between the Opature and the Women's Auxiliary. Not really cross section. Only in some areas where we are showcasing if there is a need within the women's in the Opature program. Mm-hmm. Our membership are kept abreast of what's happening in the different programs, and the users are definitely confidential. But if there's a need, you know, we'll talk about how do we fit that need within the Opature program. So there's no real cross section, because women in the Opature program are in a different space. However, if there is a cross section that is possible, we certainly will look into those opportunities as well, individually, not necessarily collectively as a group, because one is more of a program, the other one is more of a social happening. But we'll see wherever we can necessarily help in one way or the other, or add to one or the other. And we've had events where both the Women in the Opature Program and the Women's Auxiliary have, you know, I think there was one event that we had where there was that cross section where people did come together and kind of sat around a table and chatted. So just to follow up on that question, in terms of things that we're looking forward to in the Jamaica Association, yes, we do have a number of activities that are coming up. We just got over our AGM in December, and you know, in the middle of writing grants and stuff like this for other events and things we'd like to do. However, in terms of the looking forward, we have partnered with six other community organizations that represent the Caribbean. So this group is called the Caribbean Coalition Network of Montreal, and involves Antigua and Barbuda, Barbados, Dominica, Grenada, Guyana, St. Vincent, and the Grenadines, and us, the Jamaica Association. And so we are going to be hosting a meeting next Sunday via Zoom about our just our regular six-week meeting, but also talking about Black History Month. And one of the things we talk about a lot is American history when it comes to Black history. And what we are really focused on is the Caribbean, you know, and who we are as a people, where we're coming from. And that event will focus on the heroes of the Caribbean, like in different countries. We'll have anywhere from 1 to 10 heroes, right? And so that day will really focus on who are the heroes in the Caribbean, from at least one from each respective island, and to talk a little bit about who they are, to kind of broaden the knowledge of what has happened in the Caribbean and who are we as Caribbean people? Because when people think about the Caribbean, they think about vacation, but there's a whole life happening there. There's a whole reality, and it's not a part of mainstream media, let's say, right? So, but also within the Caribbean community as well, I think it's important to talk about one's history and talk about where you're coming from, and what was important and what is important. Like most recently, Barbados became a republic. Why is that important? You know, stuff like this, right? Jamaica's turning 60th. What does that, 60 years old this year, what does that mean? Where have we come as a country, an island country? Where are we? So in terms of the Jamaica Association, we're putting that together, and there's some other events around that we're working on. There's one that we're working on with Sita Ramdas, who is a advocate for patients' rights. She's been working in healthcare for very many years. And this, I think, it could be interesting for the Refugee Center as well, when you talk about those that are new and having to navigate healthcare if they're sick, and what does that mean? And so we're looking at also putting together a series of talks on healthcare and getting people, and more specifically more Black people, engaged in patients' groups, patients' rights groups. Because if people are not represented, their voices are not heard, their reality is not real for some people, because it's not you know, people reflect themselves, right? So they think, well, this is my reality, and it's not bad or good or whatever. It's just that they just don't know what they don't know. So in order for people to understand the realities that others face, it's always important to have someone there who can share an experience or talk about the realities as living as this type of individual within this realm, right? So that's what we're looking to do also with Sita, is to have these different sessions where people understand the workings of what it means to be on a patient's committee and how important, vitally important it is to be there, because the individual stories are important. We heard of Joyce Echaquan, and we heard the Native and Indigenous communities talk about the lack of respect that they got when, and many people, but more so the lack of respect that they got when going into hospitals. But I mean, unfortunately, it took the death of Joyce Echaquan to really resonate, not only within the, I mean, it resonated loudly within the Indigenous community, but within outside of those communities and within the general population, that there is a lack here, you know? So I talk a lot, I'm sorry about that, but those are two things I'd like to kind of mention right now, because essentially we're on lockdown. So we're waiting for things to open. I mean, we're still moving forward. We have our, in terms of activities, we have the seniors program that's starting next Monday, where that's completely online, funded by the government as well, the Quebec, Canadian government, the New Horizon program, that is centered around breaking isolation. And I think we have about 14 seniors that are registered for that. We have, you know, starting tomorrow, we have classes, French and English conversational classes also that are going to be online. We continue to host our food bank on a weekly basis that is open to every person who has a stomach and wants food. So we have a food bank, and it's been pretty interesting reality since COVID. We've seen a definite upsurge, more than 50% increase. In terms of our last year, we had almost 1,600 visits to the food bank last year. So it is, there's just so many things. I mean, in terms of people are coming once a week, once every 2 weeks, every month. But in terms of the numbers, it's 1,600, seven shy of 1,600 that have come in last year to use our food bank. So those are the things. In terms of our day-to-day operations, that's what's happening. We have a program for kids, we have a program for women, we have our food bank, we have the learning. We're soon going to be starting our tax clinic that's run with both the Revenue Quebec and CRA. So kind of those are the program size. And the social side, well, everything's going to be online, as Nicole's ethos I spoke about.
Wow. And this is all so incredible. There's so much incredible stuff that you talked about and so many cool events to look forward to. And please don't apologize for talking. I could listen to you talk all day, but unfortunately, this concludes our episode of Point of Entry. So thank you so much, Sharon, for joining us today. It was honestly such a pleasure learning more about the Jamaica Association and the O Future program, as well as everything else. To continue learning more about the Refugee Center, you can visit our website at therefugeecenter.org. As well, you can follow our social media platforms, including Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter. So stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you so much for listening.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, and this is In the Motherhood. Today, we're sharing a new podcast by Montreal's The Refugee Center. The podcast is called Point of Entry. In this episode, the podcast hosts talk with Carolina Manganelli, who is the Executive Director of Actions Refugiae.
This program is really unique because it really is based on a relationship of equals. It's not a mentorship type of relationship. It's not a tutoring or learning type of relationship that is formed. The vision, the way that is designed, is really to bring together recently arrived refugee women with Montreal area women. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Point of Entry, a podcast created and hosted by the Refugee Center. Join us as we explore the experiences and challenges faced by many newcomers to Canada at various stages in their journeys. Transcending borders, Point of Entry offers an exclusive into the voices behind the numbers and the policies behind the action. Travel alongside the Refugee Center as our alternating hosts, as well as our captivating guests, guide us through the resettlement process in Canada and introduce us to the inner workings of grassroots organizations here in Montreal. Hello, everyone. My name is Jude Ibrahim, and I'm the mental health coordinator at the Refugee Center, and I'm very excited to be a part of today's episode. Today, I'll be speaking with Carolina Manganelli, the executive director of Action Refugee Montréal, a nonprofit organization in Montreal that fights for justice for asylum seekers and refugees. They support individuals with a private sponsorship process, advocate for those detained for immigration reasons, and host a unique program known as the Twinning Program, something that we will speak about a lot today. Carolina, thank you so much for being here today with us. To start things off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to your current role as the Executive Director of Action Refugee Montréal?
Yes, well, thank you first, Jude and the Refugee Center for having us here today and allowing us to speak about our wonderful programs and twinning in particular. I'm very happy to be here. I don't like to talk about myself much, but I can tell you that I've always been interested in social justice. I've spent most of my academic career and my professional career in the field. I'm a lawyer by background, by training, with a master's in human rights law, and have always worked either in human rights law or in refugee law. My first experience was working with UNHCR in Bosnia back in 2000. So that was a wonderful, enriching, very, very educational experience for me. And it really solidified my dedication and interest in working with the refugee persons, displaced persons, asylum seekers. I also worked as a member of the Immigration and Refugee Board citing refugee claims. So that was a few years back, and when I saw that Action Refugee Montréal was looking for a new director, I thought it was a wonderful opportunity for me to really combine my educational background, my professional background, in a way that is really hands-on and working with a wonderful, dedicated team in grassroots accompaniment and advocacy for rights of refugee persons and asylum seekers. So I feel like it's a wonderful opportunity. I'm in the best place I can be, and I hope that I can continue the wonderful work that Action Refugee Montréal has been doing now for over 20 years. So really excited to be here. I can just mention I've been with the organization since May, so just under a year. I'm very, very excited to be here.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing these wonderful experiences and what brought you to your role. To talk more about Action Refugee Montréal, I'm wondering when the organization was founded and what services do you offer?
Yeah, so as I said, we've been in operations since 1994, so 28 years now. I started as a small two-person operation with the founder, previous founder, Glynis Williams. We're now team of seven people, and we have three major programs. The Twinning Program, which you mentioned, which is our flagship, unique program that matches recently arrived refugee women with Montreal area women. Mm. And it's a program that really is meant to break isolation for refugee women in particular, create friendships, create bonds, and also very enriching for the Montreal women who participate as well. We also have a program that we call the Detention Program. That's the short name, but the long name is we support and accompany people who are detained for immigration purposes. A lot of people don't know that for different reasons, very often, because people don't have, for example, identification documents. when they arrive here and make a refugee claim, if they don't have documents and cannot identify themselves, they are held until they're able to do so. And so they're held in a center here. It's called the Immigration Holding Center, which is sadly almost like a prison. So really, we help these people. We accompany them. We're the only organization to have access to this center, which is run by the Federal Canada Border Services Agency. And so we really go in there and are a point of contact for them with the outside world. So we go in there and give them information as to why they're there, the process for being released, for getting documents, how to make their claim. We also offer, I would say, moral and even just support in terms of sometimes they need personal hygiene products, or a main thing we do is we provide phone cards so that they may call either people here or back home in order to get, for example, those documents. So we're really a point of contact for them because they have no way to communicate with the outside world while they're there. They're not even allowed to have internet or phones. So we really appreciate and cherish this opportunity to be there and help them while they're there, which can be a very traumatic and stressful and scary experience for them. So that's one of our other main programs. And our third program is our sponsorship program, where we help family members sponsor their family who are already refugees outside of the country of origin and who are waiting for an opportunity to resettle and find a durable solution. So this is through a government program, Quebec and Canada, a special program, and we have special standing, special recognition that allows us to do these applications for family members. We recently, just 2 days ago actually, submitted 20 new applications for families for this year. So we're very happy to bring people over and reunify them with their family members here. And when they arrive, we accompany them for at least the first year and help them settle here with things like education, language courses, healthcare, social insurance cards, employment, housing, anything that they need to help them really settle and thrive here in their new homes.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing. These are such valuable and like you said, needed services. And you mentioned three programs, and I'm wondering if you can tell us a bit more about your twinning program and what it offers.
Yes, our twinning program. As you know, there are a lot of mentorship programs in different communities for different needs, also for refugee persons. This program is really unique because it really is based on a relationship of equals. It's not a mentorship type of relationship. It's not a tutoring or learning type of relationship that is formed. The vision, the way that is designed, is really to bring together recently arrived refugee women with Montreal area women. And as I said, on a reciprocal, mutual respect, equal basis. So it's not Montreal women showing the refugee woman how to, you know, buy a life or anything like that. So it's a really unique in that sense. And it's also been around for many, many years, not 28 years. I don't remember when we started the program, but it is unique in that sense. And it has two aspects. It has that individual part where what we call the twin. So we match two women, and when they're matched, they're called a twin, and they have that individual relationship. We also have group activities where all the participants can come and be together. So it's an opportunity to have that one-on-one closer relationship, but also meet other refugee women and other Montreal area women in a group context through activities and sometimes just fun activities like picnics. We've done yoga, we've done art workshops, we've done things like have from Saint Jean Baptiste last year. We had things about, like, learning the Quebec culture. So it's really, really interesting. We're working on doing some computer literacy classes, especially in a COVID world now where everything's online. That's our community program.
Oh, that's so great. And it's so wonderful to hear about how it's embedded in reciprocal relationship and respect and value. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, in COVID, you know, especially not just in COVID, in general, loneliness is often a very big challenge for newcomers.
And now for a quick break to give you our What's Up segment. This upcoming month at the Refugee Center, we have a series of new and exciting services, including our popular language courses starting at the beginning of March. So make sure you sign up in time. TRC is also bringing back some of their wellness services, including group art therapy sessions for new mothers in collaboration with the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts, yoga classes, online exercise courses, and cooking workshops in collaboration with Sun Youth and SEAM. Join us to cook some of your favorite meals all together in the comfort of your own home. In other news, TRC is proud to announce the return of our coding workshops, where students will be able to learn web development and Python career program. Finally, TRC is excited about our upcoming town hall occurring on the 31st of March in collaboration with a series of Montreal community organizations with the aim to create policy actions and provide the opportunity for members of the general public to give their input on community actions in the Greater Montreal area. Sign up for our services through our website and stay tuned online to partake in our future events. Thanks for listening in and back to Point of Entry.
I was wondering if you can expand on the importance of social connection for these individuals and how that twinning program works to help with this.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, loneliness is something that everybody can suffer from and have to overcome and deal with. And
of course,
it's very difficult for many reasons for people to make connections. If one is a recently arrived refugee woman, even more so. Leaving one's country or even if they've been living in another country before coming here, but leaving a place that they know, a society that they know, leaving behind family and friends, it's an even bigger challenge and even more present in these people's lives. So it's a real need that exists among these women. And loneliness can have detrimental effects on many levels. So we really are happy to be able to reach out and try to break that loneliness and social isolation. It's important for women to be with other women. I think there's something about, you know, being a woman that is special, and so has special challenges, has special needs. So opportunity also to connect with other women is important and very enriching. So we're happy to be able to break that isolation, mm-hmm. especially when they first arrive.
Yeah, 100%. It's so great to know that there's the space for that to happen. And, you know, mentioned loneliness exists in so many spaces for so many people. And I'm wondering, especially in COVID-19, how has COVID-19 affected the twinning program and how did you adapt to that?
So as we all know, I think COVID has increased exponentially people's loneliness, being, isolated physically and sometimes, unfortunately, socially. COVID affected our program in a way that, for example, we had fewer women actually arrive because of the border closing. So we didn't have as many recently arrived women. Mm-hmm. And so what we did, though, is we went back to women who've been here for a little bit longer. We usually reach out more to women who've been here maybe 6 months under a year. Without having new arrivals, we went back to women who were here a little bit longer, who in a sense, how COVID almost stopped time. So even though they've been here maybe 2 years, you know, that 1 year, that last year, 2020, 2021, has made time stop for everyone. So it's like mm-hmm. they've just arrived anyway, we reached out to more partners. So we feed into the program by women who come through our sponsorship program, for example. But we reached out to other organizations to see if there was a need there, and there was. And of course, providing the space was a challenge because of COVID. But we quickly and fairly easily adapted by doing a lot of things on Zoom like everybody else. We have a wonderful program coordinator who has this magical talent of matching people and finding just the right fit between the twins. And she was able to do that through Zoom in a meaningful way and with phone calls and Zoom. So that was easy to adapt. The group activities was a little bit of a bigger challenge. But again, we did some online activities. Technology is wonderful. Were it not for technology, I don't know where we would be in these COVID times. So we continued our group activities online in the spring and the summer with the better weather and some of the easing of restrictions. We held group activities outside. We usually do them in our office or in the space that's located near our office, but we took advantage of the great weather to do things outside. So it's been a challenge, obviously, and definitely created, as I said, more need for people to connect. And with the help of technology, we were able really to keep the program going. And I have to say, we didn't feel that the program suffered at all, either in terms of the number of activities we could do, the number of women that we matched. In fact, we had we were aiming for 15 sets of twins and we managed to get 18 sets last year. We managed to do an activity every month, whereas our goal was to, do one maybe every 6 weeks, but we managed to do one every 4 weeks. So we're really happy that we were able to keep the program thriving through these times, and hopefully we're going to be coming out of COVID soon completely. And get back to doing things in person throughout the year, even when our Montreal weather doesn't permit.
Yes, that's truly amazing to see the ways you, one, adapted, but also found alternative ways to connect. And it's truly great to learn about the services and spaces you provide. I'm wondering, how can individuals get involved if they are interested in doing so, both newcomers and individuals who have lived in Montreal for longer?
Yes, so we're always looking for new participants. Even though we have quite a few on our waiting list, we're blessed, I would say, by having a great interest in this program. We have different ways. There are different ways that you can contact us. There's our website, of course. ActionR.org, www.actionr.org. With information on the program and the email of a program coordinator with whom people can get in touch. We also contact it's called the Centre d'Action Bénévole de Montréal. So we have a lot of Montreal women who go through that organization and we get referrals through them, so they can contact that center and be part of their roster and contact us. The coordinator's email address is, in French, it's jumelage@actionr.org. So that's another way to contact us. But of course, our website, Facebook, Instagram, all fabulous ways to get in touch with us and learn about also some of the activities that we're doing. We just had a yoga activity last month online. So we're always happy to have women interested in participating in this program.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing with us these points of contact. And with that, this concludes this episode of Point of Entry. Truly, thank you so much, Carolina, for joining us today. It was really a pleasure learning more about Action Refugee Montréal and your wonderful twinning program and all the other services you provide. To continue learning more about the Refugee Center, you can visit our website at therefugeecenter.org, as well as you can follow us on our social media platforms, including Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you so much for listening, everyone.
Thank you very much, Jude. Thank you to the Refugee Center.
Thank you. Yeah.
That was Point of Entry, a new podcast produced by Montreal nonprofit organization, the Refugee Center. Thanks to the Refugee Center for allowing In the Motherhood to broadcast the podcast. You can listen to Point of Entry on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and find all of the episodes at pointofentrypodcast.org. To learn more about the Refugee Center and their work, you can visit them at therefugeecenter.org and follow them on social media. And you can listen to In the Motherhood every third Wednesday of the month and find us on Facebook at CKUT-InTheMotherhood. You can email us at inthemotherhood@ckut.ca. Thanks for listening to CKUT and donate whenever you can.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Mandla, your weekly news show with briefings and analysis from the continent of Africa, from a progressive pan-Africanist point of view. And I'm Doug Miller, here with Gwen Shulman.
Here this time is we are in Malawi, not in Montreal, and you're about to listen to a rebroadcast because Doug and I are away for Malawi 1 month, actually. And in the time that we're there, we hope to do some great radio so that when we're back home in Montreal, there's going to be some good, fresh interviews for all of you to listen to. But in the meantime, we've picked some of our favorite shows from the last year to rebroadcast while we're away.
So stay tuned.
So tonight's show is a very special show. While, of course, we're rebroadcasting because Doug and I are currently in Malawi, what we're missing and we're sad to be missing is the fundraising show. It's always been a special time of year for us at Amandla. Why? Because we love CKUT and we love the fact that they create a space for us here on Amandla to do what we do. And we feel it's really important to support the station. So while we can't be there for an hour encouraging you to go online and make a donation, we're going to spend 2 minutes and encourage you to go online and make a donation. Why? Because CKUT has expenses. It has rent to pay. It has a wonderful skeleton, hardworking staff to pay. It has maintenance costs and equipment costs to pay. And it can only do that with the generosity of our listeners. So please consider going on to ckut.ca. There's a nice donate button right there. Please click on it and give what you can. Doug?